When you think boots, you think Ariat. You think comfort from day one and durability to day 1,000. You think steel toes on the job, square toes on the dance floor, with style that owns a Saturday night and still looks sharp enough for Sunday dinner. And through every mile and every moment, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, turn bad ideas into better stories, and still punch the clock come Monday morning. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat boots at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors. A clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. Delighted and thrilled to have the wonderful human being, David Hyatt, in The Clearing. I've been after you for some time. I don't know if you know this, but I've become a bit of a pet stalker in a healthy way. It's the Do lectures that really, really hooked me and intrigued me. And I'm really excited to curate you through the journey of The Good Listening To Show. And I'm particularly excited to have you now. I have been chasing you for a while, but actually it's great because you've come into the podcast at an inception point, which I'm very excited about. It's the all new Good Listening To Show, which is stories of distinction and genius. And I'm happy to say that you have a very distinct story, but also not just to blow some smirk at you. I think what you're doing in the polymath world is quite ingenious in any case, in some of the choices that you're making. And so welcome to the Genius Club. And I'm very excited that you are number one in the all new for 2023 version of where I'm going with this storyscape.
Wow. Wow, that's nice.
So first question, I described you as a polymath. If I may just shock you with a slightly blunt question, first of all, if we're swimming alongside you in the sea or I meet you in a context where I don't know who you are, what's your favourite way of answering or avoiding when someone goes, oh, hello, you look interesting. What do you do? What's your favourite way of either answering or avoiding that?
I think if somebody's asking, I tend to to say I'm like an entrepreneur, and it's always difficult because they might know you for the Do lectures, or they might know you for Howie's, they might know you for Hyatt, or they might not. They might just know you because you write a bunch of words on the social media. So. And the thing that I am is I'm a serial entrepreneur, mostly because nobody's going to employ me. I'm unemployable on a high degree. So I have to start businesses because that's the only way I can earn a living, by employing myself. Tend to be a rough answer.
And have you been called a polymath before?
I've been called lots of things, but not a polymath in math, yeah.
So I'll give you that for free, because it's worth unpacking that word, actually, because it's very interesting, because I need to find lots of distractions. You know, even in the storyscape behind me, there are a couple of squirrels of distraction, which we'll get onto. So it's just very relatable. Also, you have a picture that I saw on LinkedIn that just completely made me go nom, 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 nom. It's the idea you have in a clearing is a doorway, a yellow doorway in the middle of a field that you have. And it's just as glorious as a gateway or a portal to a new, it says new me on your door. But I like, because I'm in a clearing and I'm using it as a centerpiece to then get on a bit of a storyscape, I found the image of the yellow front door in your clearing, in your field, close to your cow shed, in Cardigan, just gorgeous. And I congratulate you for the ingeniousness of having a door in the middle of a field.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I mean, I was out with some friends, and one of my friends is quite. He gets to the point really quick, and he's going, Dave, why is there a door in the middle of your field? And I went, I said, well, there's a door in the middle of the field, so you would one day ask me the question, why is there a door in the middle of the field? And I mean, a lot of what the Do Lectures is, it's if you know, for most people who don't actually know it, you think, oh, it's a, like an events business, but we're really in the magic business and the myth making business, because we only have 100 customers a year, and our job is to try and get 100 people to go away and go, you have to go to the Do Lectures. And these people, like, you know, they come to a life-changing event, and it can seem like, when you sort of say that, it sounds a little bit glib, and you go, how is that even possible? But I think people come because they're at a fork in their road, and so do I turn left, do I turn right? And there's a little bit of moment of clarity, you know, in that question. And yeah, and I think that's what the Do Lectures is. And in a way, the door really represents, like, you know, where you are now is always a good starting point. But where do you want to be is another, a greater question, because it tells you, like, where's the ambition? Where's the hope? You know, where's the difference? And so the door becomes a metaphor for that question, really.
And it completely appeals to my own way of thinking, actually. And as I'm, your copy's gorgeous within the Do Lecture space. You know, what you dream is what you do. So dream big, and do exists to get you from where you are now to where you could be. So it's all about unleashing potential. I know you know all this, but that's just what I found very, very relatable in yeah, wanting to talk to you.
And it's an interesting one. If people are listening now and you think, oh, the Do Lectures has got 150 million downloads, it doesn't have problems getting speakers, the tickets sell out, you know, in a day. It wasn't always like that. You know, we started with no website. No speaker wanted to come. We couldn't sell tickets, even though we were losing money on every ticket. Do you mean? And I think hopefully, you know, at the end of this, you know, one thing you'll learn from me is I do believe in that thing of, like, you have to prevail. And your biggest gift to your idea is not giving up on it, and just going quietly about it each and every day. And the Do Lectures has suddenly become, people go, oh, it's amazing. But the one thing that we didn't do was quit. And it was so easy to, because none of the data points that most people look at make sense. Oh, you don't pay yourself for 10 years. Doesn't make any sense. Or money. I mean, and yet, you know, like well, myself, and I talk about it, like me, but it's really myself and Claire. We're a team, and we're married, and we have kids together. We're friends. So, like, that's the thing. You just go, like, you have to prevail at the thing that you love in order to get so good at it, and it does make sense. And I feel like that's been, like, part of my, and the one thing I'm sort of proud of is that I am now got that ability to go, yeah, okay, tomorrow, today's been a good day or a hard day, but, like, tomorrow we go again. And I think that's, you know, the danger for most people is, like, they want the instant answer, and it tends to not really exist. And I think that, you know, just fall in love with the beautiful small win each day, and let them add up. And then they add up a little bit each day. And that's okay. Yeah.
I love that. You have to prevail. Tomorrow we go again. And I know that that was one of your strategies, actually, to prevail during the pandemic. I was very struck with one of your Twitter feeds, of which I've seen many, whereby you had all, during the pandemic, all your previous live workshop flip charts were in a big stack. And rather than dispose of them, you realized there's gold in that stack. And you started to just upload them almost page by page. And therein lies a prevailing Twitter feed of awesome inspiration.
Yeah, I mean, and it's, I think we tend to dismiss perhaps work that we've done previously, and but there's, to a lot of people, it's new gold, and they've never seen anything you've done, so it's absolutely new gold to you. It's only old gold to yourself. But to 99% of the people on the planet, they're going, I have no idea who David Hyde is, and I've never been to his course. I don't know what the Do Lectures is. I wear jeans, but that's about it. And, you know, falling in love with the work that you've done, you've already created old gold, but it's new gold to someone else. And I kind of like that.
I kind of like that stroke, love that too. There's gold in them thar hills. And in fact, there's gold coming up, alchemy and gold within the construct of this podcast. Huzzah!
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So, should we get you on the open road then of this?
Yeah.
Really exciting. So, first of all, it's going, well, as you know, thank you for preparing. It's a clearing, a tree, there's some alchemy, some gold, a couple of random squirrels, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So, first of all, David Hyatt, in your polymathness of awesomeness, what is, where is a clearing? What is it for you? Where do you go to get clutter-free, inspirational, and able to think?
It's kind of, I mean, I did have like two in my mind, but I've settled on one, and that was, you know, the open sea. And I'll give you a backstory. A local friend, sort of said, you know, do you fancy going into the sea? And it was winter, and I'm going, well, I'm not a very good swimmer, and I don't like the cold. And so a year and a half later, we'd been in there pretty much every day. And so that moment of going in the sea, where especially now winter, it's like super cold, although it's not as cold as it was last year, where you're doing hard things, and there's a little moment within the hard bit, which is a little sweet spot, where you can reset all your stresses and, you know, like your worries for that moment, because the only thing you're really worried about right now is A, don't drown, and also like how cold it is, and can you survive the cold? But there's a little sweet spot where you have a little moment of beautiful clarity about everything. And maybe it lasts, I don't actually know how that long that lasts. Is it a minute? Is it 5 minutes? I don't really know. But there's a beautiful moment of clearing where you just go, oh, I can see my worry for what it really is. It's not a mountain, it's a molehill. But also you have these ideas about things. You go, oh, that's what I should be doing. And I think the sea is a good place for me. And always when I go in, I go, what the hell am I doing? And then always when I come out, I'm going, I'm glad I went in.
Love that. Just allowing a bit of silence there. Absolutely gorgeous. So there we are then, within navigating the choppy seas of adversity metaphorically, but there's that. So we're in the sweet spot with you, if I may join you and interrupt you at that point. And I'm going to arrive now with rather comically with a tree in your clearing, and I'm going to shake your tree to see which storytelling apples fall out. And this is where you've been kind enough to have taken 5 minutes, David Hyatt, to have thought about four things that have shaped you, three things that inspire you, two things that never fail to grab your attention and borrow from the film Up. That's where the two random squirrels come in, with the dog going, well, squirrels. And then a quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't possibly know until you tell us. So over to you to shake the canopy of the trees within your seascape clearing.
So, I mean, the four things that, you know, sort of inspire me, it's, I mean, there's many things, but I'll tell you the story about, because you're in Bristol right now, and Bristol played a big part in my life because I went to college there, and I left school. I went and picked daffodils for a living. It's really hard. Don't do it. And so I went back and did my A-levels in 1 year. I went to college and I kind of had a lot of fun. And I didn't do any work. And therefore, in Bristol, there's a telephone box. I had to go into the telephone box and, you know, phone my mum up and tell her that I got thrown out of college. And that was a really hard lesson in terms of, well, you know, anything that you want, you're going to have to work for. And there's never going to be a point where you can just cruise and let go. And so that was a really important point in my life in terms of inspired me. We're going, like, I'm going to have to do some work if I want the things I want. And I had three bags. I didn't have any money. I had to leave Bristol. I got thrown out. My mother was actually, she didn't say very much, which is even worse than saying a lot. And I had to go across the Severn Bridge, and I had three bags because I got a lift as far as just the bridge. But because I had three bags, I could only carry two at a time. So it took me hours to get across the bridge because I could take two bags and go back for the other one. And in that moment, I just thought, like, I don't mind failing as long as I tried my best. And so that was a moment of inspiration for me. And I've got to do four things, right?
Yes, but that was lovely. It's number one.
And
is your mum still with us? Do you mind if I ask?
She is, just about, but unfortunately she's not well, and she's probably not going to get better. And so, but that moment of, like, I can fail, but as long as I know I've tried my best. And actually, I didn't try my best at college. I didn't try at all. So the other thing is, at 16, I tried to start a sports brand because I was obsessed. And I persuaded my dad that I didn't need to do A-levels. I kind of knew enough. I definitely didn't. And he lent me a bunch of money. He only had £1,000 saved, and he lent me £500. And so he gave me half of his net worth. And within 6 months, you know, I'd lost the business. I didn't really know what I was doing. And I had to go and say to him, I'm going to close, because I think, you know, people were on strike, and you know, all my customers were on strike, and they didn't have any money. And it was a really hard thing to go at 16, you had all these dreams, and then the dream went away. And I said to my dad, I said, look, hey, I'm going to have to close this business. I'm really sorry, I'll let you down. And he said, well, what did you learn? And I said, well, I really love it. I really love brands, and I really want to go and start one day. And he said, well, so the second piece of learning is, now how do you go and be so good that you can always do it? And so he didn't like tell me off, didn't say anything. Just so, like, if you really truly love it, is get so good that you can always do it for the rest of your life, not just for 6 months. And in a way, that's what I went away and did. And
if I may, there's two beautiful bits of parental love there. One is silence from your mother, and then one wasn't to dash you on the rock of disappointment from your father. Yeah. And what have you learned? What a great question.
Yeah. And I suppose the other piece of, I'm sort of thinking about these things because they actually did shape me quite a lot. And so after I got thrown out of college, I had a good time at college, and I had a quite a nice overdraft to go with it, to prove it. And so me and my mate, Charles, we decided we'd start a painting business, and it was called Slap and Dash. And actually, we set it up in Oxford, because that's where he lived, and it was really popular. But what I learned from painting was 80% of the work of, like painting a house, was in the prep. And so your preparation for the house is sanding down, clearing everything, taking all the wallpaper off. Every bit of the job was informed by how well you did the prep. And if you didn't do the prep, then the job was terrible. And it's so easy in life not to do the prep. And you suddenly go, so I learned that, from painting. And the other thing, the fourth thing was really, I'd finally, after about 150 interviews, I got a job at an advertising company called Saatchi & Saatchi. And at the time, it was like the world's most creative advertising agency. And I was 21. I'd been thrown out of college. I'd had a business. I went out of business in a rapid amount of time and didn't really have any qualifications apart from I could think. And And I was dyslexic, I was left-handed, and I hadn't really read a bunch of books. I'd read football magazines until I met Claire. But I really did love it, and I was around smart people, and I really absolutely, the joy of learning, the joy of working with amazing people was, I was so incredibly lucky. I was scared as hell because I didn't really want to go back on, you know, being unemployed for a year and a half. There's only so much beans on toast you can eat. But the thing I learned there was a guy who was CEO of Saatchi's at the time, Louis Dreyfus, came in and said, I'm going to go and buy Adidas. And I went, oh, man, I already thought he was cool. He smoked, like I don't smoke, by the way, but he smoked a cigar. He wore jeans. I think he was going out with Kim Basinger at the time. I don't know if that's actually true. But who cares if it's actually true? Because it's just like, but then he came in and said, I'm going to go and buy Adidas. And you think, oh, man, you are now officially the coolest role model I've got in my life. And he went and bought it. And so at Saatchi's, we pitched for it and everybody thought we were going to get it. But actually what no one realized at the time was, you know, Charles and Morris had fallen out with Louis Dreyfus and yeah, he faxed them, you know, that they didn't win the pitch. But at that point, I'd fallen back in love with the thing that I already knew I was in love with, which was starting sports brands. And so I took a £20,000 pay cut and I had to go and tell my best mate who I work with and who was my best man at my wedding, Ajab Samurai Singh, who's a legend and love him to bits. But I had to go and tell my best mate that I was going to leave him, take a pay cut to go and work at an agency because, you know, they'd won the Adidas account. And that was a really hard thing. But what I learned was whenever I've not chased money.
Was that Mr. Slap and Dash, by the way, is the great friend?
No, that wasn't actually. That was Charles Valentine Legate Pierce, who was also a legend. That was a hard thing. But I was doing it not to, you know, go after more money. I was chasing the work. And actually, whenever I've chased the work and not the money, I've always made more money. Wow. And so I went there and actually, you know, Tim Delaney, he was a really top copywriter, but he didn't buy anything that I wrote in a year and a half. And I tried like crazy and there was no amount of like getting anything through him. But I had all this work that I had amassed because he just wouldn't buy it. But I discovered this voice and I went, oh. And it was a really hard, you know, like year and a half of like, just like your boss didn't really want you there. And I've never really had that before. Whereas Saatchi's, I was kind of really, you know, people really liked me. So it was like suddenly you go into this environment where you go, hey, he probably doesn't rate you as a writer. He's not going to buy anything. He really hired your mate, not you. And you go, oh, okay. But I had amassed all this work.
Yes.
And so I turned that work into T-shirts and I started a company called Howie's, which gave myself and Claire the biggest paycheck we ever had. Because we ended up selling it to Timberland. We had people like Japan's Richest Guy wanted to buy it. You know, Steve Case, who started AOL wanting to buy it. We had a company called PPR, which is now called Kering, you know, which own a portfolio of amazing brands called Gucci, Yves Saint Laurent and Puma. And they'd made a shortlist of two brands in the world that they wanted to buy, and Howie's was one of them.
Wow.
So kind of...
Knowing you, as I think I might, Howie's wasn't necessarily sold to the highest bidder. Was Timberland a sort of...
No, we didn't actually sell it to the highest bidder. We actually sold it to somebody who said that Wales meant more to them than anybody else. So, Steve Case wanted to invest $25 to $30 million, but the only catch was Claire had to go and move to California, which we'd never been to California at the time, and we didn't know how warm it was. And maybe in benefit of hindsight, we probably would have done that. but only joking. But no, we were committed to Cardigan, and we stay committed to Cardigan. We like being part of a small community, and we're just a little tiny bit of that community. No big fish,
and I also know. I also know, by the way, that obviously Hyatt Denim got going because you wanted to save a factory where 400 people were being laid off, and it was a denim factory, and Hyatt Denim was born. With your sense of community at its core, I mean, and Wales.
Yeah, and this is still work in progress. I mean, really part of my search is it possible to do business in another way where you're trying to serve your community rather than just milk your community? And that's always the thing. And it's harder, but it's also more worthwhile in the end.
I love that one of your venues, by the way, is called the Cowshed, and you just talk about milking your community and not milking them. It's lovely and happily ironic because you've got the Cowshed.
But it is that thing of like building a community, serving your community. Every time I've ever served my community, I've won. I mean, even though I wasn't doing it just to do that. That's the moral, really, is every time I chase the work, not the money, I got the biggest paycheck I've ever done. And every time I've chased any kind of money, I mean, well, I haven't really chased the money yet. I've always chased the work.
So. And your own Due publication of that of itself is a great series of books, but Due Purpose was one that was given to us in attending your workshop about having big ideas and how to go about doing that. Purpose and connection is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think, yeah, a business has the ability to make change, and that change can be a positive one. It can be a negative one in the wrong hands, for sure. But I think a business is a really amazing tool for change, and that's the opportunity of a business, really.
And with community at its core in everything that you're doing purposefully is what I'm also hearing.
Yeah, no, and I mean, like, every business has many communities to serve, and you know, there's the inner community, and that's your team. I mean, you know, there's the your closer community, which is your town. Do you mean like there's a bigger community called, you know, the planet? Are you a polluter, or are you trying to minimize what you're doing? So there's many communities that you're going to serve. I mean, obviously your customers want. Do you mean, but most businesses only try and serve, you know, the founder. If they're truly on it. And I think that's like you're playing pretty small as a business owner when that's all you do. And lo and behold, when the hard times come, you know, the big storm comes and you haven't put any roots down, and you're the tree that gets blown down.
Yes. And by the way, your integrity is very interesting as well, because of I read a recent post where there's a leadership reflections thing in the fact that you said never stand in the way of somebody else's dream, where you were letting go somebody that was incredibly precious to you within the community of the Hyatt Denim factory. That was one of your recent posts.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's it's always hard, right? You know, you're running a business. Your business is only as good as the people you attract in terms of like your team. And so like your future is based on like how good are you attracting talent. But like talent comes and talent is really like an amazing human being who has incredible drive. And the moment you get in the way of their dreams, you're really like only thinking about yourself. And you've got to attract people, but also know they're probably going to leave and go and do other amazing things. And if you actually hire amazing people, they're almost definitely going to go and do other amazing things. And so the mentality for a lot of business owners is they want, you know, people to stay forever. And I'm there going, I would rather be like a launch pad than a retirement home. And because like, you know, you're going to, like when somebody amazing leaves, you're going to get more people want to come and work for you anyway. So it really is, if you want to make a distinction, it's the scarcity mindset versus the abundance mindset. You know, Leanne wanted to go to London. She's amazing. She's incredible. She's got beautiful energy about her. She's super talented. I mean, I sent her on, even when she was freelance, I sent her like to America on a course. And people go, why would you send her? You haven't employed her. I'm going, it doesn't really matter, because if I do employ her, it's because she wants to be employed. And lo and behold, she said, hey, I'm going to stay in Cardigan for a while. I'd like to work for you. And you go, great. But I didn't know that. So.
And I don't know if you've ever written that down. I'd rather be a launch pad than a retirement home. That's fantastic.
Yeah, actually.
Wonderful. So I think we could have found the four shapages. Now, there could be some overlap, but three things that inspire you now. And it could be there's, you know, you may be giving me that anyway. But
the thing that inspires me is, well, there's many things, but when I meet somebody who has hunger and really wants to go and, you know, I'll go back to that original question, where are you now? Where do you want to be? And when I see the hunger, you don't always see the talent that comes with it, because the hunger really trains the talent. And so I love working with hungry people, and I get a kick out of that. And I care about them because they care about them. And I can't never wish like more for their future than they wish for their future. Do you mean? So it's and to give you an example, you know, we tried to do after like I had a year where I wasn't allowed to do anything I knew anything about for after I sold Howie's, right? So I had too much time and I had a little bit of money, and somebody came to me and said, oh, do you want to start a pub? I'm going, I make an investment on a Friday in a pub between 6 o'clock and 7:30. And sometimes that investment is really poor. So that's as much as an investment as I want. So anyway, I ended up being a sleeping partner to this thing on certain rules. And it was an absolute car crash. I mean, it was, you know, and you know, lost a ton of money. It was a car crashing
into the side of a pub, by the sound of it.
it was on another level. But to give you an example of what can happen is, you know, the waiter, he was really interesting. He's super bright, but he was really, really arrogant. But I quite liked him, and I'd give him books, and he would do something which was quite rare, and that it was actually read them. You know, people like you go, oh, go and read this book, and they just leave it on their table, which kind of is a marker for lack of hunger, right? So, but he would read them, and he said, I've got any more? I'm going, yeah, okay, got more. So anyway, we're closing this pub. We've just been voted, I don't know, something in this book that only seven other restaurants have been, you know, like, and we're pushing this fridge out of the cellar door. And the bloody fridge won't go out of the bloody cellar because the bloody wheels are on it. And so then this is Porsche Cayenne. I literally can see it now. Porsche Cayenne pulled up on the street. And I see this guy walking towards us, and he poked his head through the cellar, and he said, are you open tonight? And I went, not tonight. Probably not tomorrow night either. He's going, okay then, don't worry. So anyway, going back to Tom, I was speaking to a friend in London who was creative director at Wieden Kennedy, and he said, do you know any good writers? I said, well, I know somebody's really raw. I think he's a good writer because I kind of got him to write some stuff for me. He's a terrible waiter, so if you're going to hire him for a waiter, I wouldn't. But if you're going to hire him to be a writer, I think he could do a good job. So anyway, he got a job as a copywriter in what I consider to be one of the best advertising agencies in the world, Wieden Kennedy, who also do Just Do It. And he did really well. And he wrote the Coca-Cola commercial for Christmas one year. And so terrible waiter, really good writer. And the last I heard from him, he said, Dave, can you do this reference for me? Because I've just been headhunted for creative director of this amazing advertising agency in New York. And I was kind of tempted to go like, don't let him in the country as my reference. But he's gone from like being, you know, like pretty average waiter, you know, not even average waiter.
To he said he was terrible. Yeah.
Yes, terrible. Yes.
Terrible.
But actually, when you see hunger, that's a really lovely thing, and as much as every says they're hungry, most people say they're hungry, but they don't actually follow through on their words. And yes. and so hunger is actually quite rare.
And so, if they're backing themselves, it makes it much easier then to be able to invest in them psychologically, because they back themselves, yeah. They have the hunger, and they want to do it.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So back to you. You're still in the influencing canopy, or we can get on to two things that never fail to grab your attention, depending on where you feel you're at within your
journey. Two things. Was there two things that
never fail to grab your attention? Dolph squirrels. So what are your squirrels of distraction, David Hyatt?
I can't refuse a interesting book. So if I'm listening to a podcast, and if I say, if I mention The Daily Laws by Robert Greene, like, I would be the person who's listening to this podcast and going, oh, that sounds interesting. And
what was that book again? It's
The Daily Laws by Robert Greene, right. 366 Meditations on Power, Seduction, Mastery, Strategy, and Human Nature.
Nice.
And it's pretty brilliant. But I would be the one who's listening to this podcast, and I would literally, as we're speaking, I would be buying the book. So my rule is, if it's interesting, I don't have to think about it, I just buy the blinking book, right? So my thing is, I love learning, and so I love buying books. I love listening to podcasts. I mean, it's a joy to be on your podcast, but I just love that thing of, like, I don't know, people sharing insights and, you know, inspiration, whatever. It's never not been of interest to me. And the hard thing for me is to do the hard stop and to go, right, okay, enough. This is some, you know, quiet time. That's the hard thing. The other thing that inspires me is really wanting to get better at writing right now. Do you mean? So, and that thing of the different levels that you are on, and you know, and I guess this is related to learning, but it's like, people say, oh, you're a good writer. I go, well, I'd like to be on that next level. And what do I have to do to do that? And right now is like, I want to learn how to be, you know, like to do more humorous stuff, more irreverent stuff. So I'm literally writing out a piece of writing that I love, and I'm writing it, handwriting it, and saying it out loud 100 times. And it takes 12 minutes, so that's 20 hours of. But at the end of it, I'm just going, oh, and next month you go, what do I want to learn? Oh, I want to learn about inspiration. Okay, so I'm going to handwrite something else, and I like backing myself. Not just go, I want to be a better writer. I'm literally backing myself by doing the hard stuff in order to, well, is it possible to get to another level? And that inspires me.
And I can see what you're doing there, because the best way to learn something properly is force yourself to teach it. I know that you're teaching a course, which I've actually signed up to, on how to become a better writer in a couple of months' time. And I love the fact that you're doing the preparation now by... So you're going to be sharing a work in progress, which is very commendable. Yeah. It's not perfect. It's going to be a really delightful work in progress, I don't doubt.
Yeah, and it's a good point. I mean, every time I've done a course, I've been on a learning journey myself. I'm literally going, God, like the person who's probably going to learn the most is me, because I'm like, going, wow, what does that next level truly look like? And you can't stand in front of people unless you've done the work.
Yes.
I think
it goes right back to your painting and it goes right back to your painting and decorating. It's all about the preparation before you can slap it on.
All about the prep. But most people don't want to do the prep. They just, because in painting, you can get away with a job, because it's only in about a year's time, or maybe a year and a half's time, that actually people will actually find out that you didn't do a good job.
And it starts peeling off the walls.
Yes. Yeah, and it's only in 5 years' time that they find out you did a really great job.
Yes.
So it's like delayed gratification of like, oh, foundation, good job, Dave.
Foundations of awesomeness. Okay, we could be up to now. This is now the quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't possibly know until you tell us.
Okay. This is, well, I had to think about this one, and it's kind of interesting. And so I'm like pretty shy, introvert. And so I had this moment in school where I'd entered a raffle, and it was for a Greenpeace t-shirt. So I was quite into it. And then they announced the winner in front of everyone at school. And I knew a second before he announced it that I'd won, right? And I'm there going, and I knew I'd have to get up in front of everybody and take the claps. And I just made a pact to myself, I'm never going to go and enter a raffle again. Because having all that attention on me, like, it was horrendous. And I loved the T-shirt, and I wore the T-shirt until it was rags, but... And the mirror story to that was a friend who I did text this morning, actually, funny enough, because I was thinking about him, was he invited me to a rugby game, Ireland and Wales, and it was a posh dinner, and he had this table, and, you know, we were having a couple of beers, and it was lovely, and he said, I've entered everybody on the table into the raffle. And I was there, I had this really... I'd had a couple of beers, and I was then suddenly completely sober. And I'm going, oh, I know what's going to happen next. And lo and behold, and the winner is so David Hyatt. And I'm going, and then there's TV cameras there. There's the Welsh rugby player.
Next level raffle. I like that.
Yeah. And I'm literally just going, oh. So that was the one fact that I don't enter raffles. I'm actually really shy. I don't like attention. And
the fact you won the two raffles means I'd just like to pull alongside you and enter a raffle with you, the comedy route of three. Great, quirky, unusual fact. So now we've shaken your tree. Awesome shakeage. Now we're going to move away from the tree, but staying in the clearing, which is in your cold seascape of wonderment. And now we're going to talk about alchemy and gold. When you're at purpose and in flow, what are you absolutely happiest doing, David Hyatt, in what you're here to reveal to the world?
So I've got a discipline of trying to do 3 hours of work each day, and that's enough. And what I'm doing at that point is I'm in the shed. I've set my timer. And I do it in hour chunks, because then I can have a coffee or go to the toilet. But and it's 59 minutes, 59 seconds, and I work without, without anything. Everything's switched off, and I literally am just writing, and I'm really super focused. And if I can string 2 hours, or on a really amazing day, 3 hours, I've done more work than most people do in 8 hours. And I'm really focused. I'm not multitasking. I'm literally doing that. And I'm writing. I'm researching. And right now I've written. I'm doing a course for small magical events, which is my big course for the year. But I've written, by the end of it, I will have written 2 books. But I'm doing it in chunks of 2 to 3 hours a day. And so I'm in the shed. It's probably raining. And I'm super focused, and I've had a black coffee, and all is good.
Lovely answer. And now I'm going to award you with a cake, rather than just splatching it in your face. First of all, do you like cake, Mr. David Hyatt?
I do, and especially with a cup of tea.
Oh, not the black coffee, a cup of tea. Is the tea black as well, can we ask? Are you doing milk at the moment?
No, I do white tea, but cake needs kind of tea. As opposed to coffee, I think.
And it's your cake, so what cake are we going for? It's a metaphorical cake, so I may deliver it someday in person, but...
Yeah, I mean, I like my mum's like Christmas cake, sort of like it's full of fruit, and I mean it's very much a meal. I mean, it's got a lot of energy in there. But
my last guest was Christopher Biggins, and he likes Christmas cake with marzipan. So do you have marzipan?
Yeah, marzipan. I'm not opposed to marzipan. I don't always love it, but I just think now and again I kind of enjoy it. So, but yeah, a beautiful Christmas cake is fantastic. So.
Splendiferous. And now the multi-layered cakeness is, what's your favourite inspirational quote that has always given you succour and pulled you towards your future, is question number one of the cake. This is where you're putting a cherry on the cake.
Yeah, I mean, my old boss was Paul Arden, and he's written, bless him, he's no longer with us, but his most famous book was, "It's not how good you are, it's how good you want to be." And I think that goes back to my hunger. That goes back to, where are you now? Where do you want to be? And I love that quote because it really is like, it does celebrate hunger. I like underdogs because they have the hunger. And so, yeah, Paul Arden, and I recommend his book as well. It is an amazing book. It's not how good you are, it's how good you want to be.
Lovely. And what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
This sounds a bit odd, but like when I was painting, I was really, I'd been strong at college. I'd had a, business that didn't last. And I was having a cup of tea with the lady that we were working for painting her house. And she asked me, like, what is it you want to do? I said, well, I actually want to try and get into advertising. I want to be a writer, but I'm not sure if I can. And she said, well, why didn't you try? And I think that thing, I've learned that the importance of, like, if there's so many things that I could say that, there's other people who went to a better college or read more books or, not dyslexic. But I do love the thing in the world where, the person who tries super hard can actually make it.
Resonates so well with, what you dream is what you do. So dream big, which resonates with that lovely thing about, the difference in life between what you want and what you get is what you do. So I love that energy of trying. Fantastic.
Yeah, definitely.
What notes, help or advice might you proffer to a younger version of David Hyatt?
If I was, talking to my 21-year-old self, I would say do 30 minutes a day on getting better at writing, and because that would be significantly massive. And I think what most of us sort of forget is the importance of how when you change a little something, you change a lot of things. And doing the press ups every day for 30 minutes a day, you think, oh, it's not going to make much difference, and it is over a decade significant and remarkable. And fall in love with that small win each day where you go, oh, 20 minutes isn't going to do any difference. 30 minutes won't do any difference. And, if I was commuting, I would literally go and write, how do I get better at this thing for 30 minutes a day? That's what I would say to myself. And because otherwise we fall in love with the big win, and the big wins are actually just small wins that add up all the time. And so compound your ability to learn each day is incredible. And I've got a quote here, which I know I've already given you a quote, but it's not your studies that will bear fruit, but the intensity of your attention. And so that intensity of, like, 30 minutes a day, okay, right, okay, learn from the best. Okay, what can I learn from this? Okay, how do I get better? That's a nice journey to go on. That's a lovely journey.
And we're going to crank up to Shakespeare and legacy in a moment. But first of all, I'd just like to find out, where can we find out more about David Hyatt, the Do Lectures, and the empire of polymathness that is you? Where can we find out more about you on the hinterweb?
Well, I mean, I'm most active on LinkedIn. I'm writing, I tend to write each and every day. And again, I'm going to the word gym because I want to get better. And so I'm there. They do lectures and .co.uk or .com or whatever. I mean, it's got its nice fancy website. The High Denim. You know, if you need jeans, come. We got the best jeans in the world.
And it's a different spelling to your surname, isn't it? The Hyatt in the Hyatt.
Yeah, it's H-I-U-T, and it's Hyatt obviously for our surname, but also UT for utility because you know jeans are a great utilitarian product for the creative man and woman.
Nice.
On Google, you're not very far away from finding me. So yeah, I'm pretty active on, definitely on LinkedIn. I'm doing some stuff. So
there's two more moments left. So now Shakespeare and all the world a stage and all the men and women merely players. When all is said and done, David Hyatt, how would you most like to be remembered?
I would like to be remembered as someone who tried to find another way to do business and where you are trying to serve your community, where, you know, you're trying to use business to change things for the better. And I think that's what more of us need to do, I think.
You've been listening to the Good Listening To show here on UK Health Radio with me, Chris Grimes. Oh, it's my son.
If you've enjoyed the show, then please do tune in next week to listen to more stories from The Clearing.
If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, then please do so. There's also a dedicated Facebook group for the show too. You can contact me about the programme, or if you'd be interested in experiencing some personal impact coaching with me, care of my Level Up Your Impact programme, that's chris@secondcurve.uk. On Twitter and Instagram, it's
@thatchrisgrimes.
So until next time, from me, Chris Grimes, from UK Health Radio, and from Stan,
to your good health.
Goodbye. So, David, you've just been given a good listening to. Thank you for saying yes. How was that experience for you? What do you think of this curated journey and the structure of the podcast?
I loved it. It made me think. Yeah, you kept me on my toes, and I had to make sure I prepared for it because I hadn't really been on a podcast with such an interesting set of questions. So, well done.
Thank you very much. And sincerely, thank you for saying yes. I did really enjoy the moment when I said, OK, ask the question, yes or no. And there's the most delicious story, by the way, about David Bowie. Have I shared this with you before in times we've been talking? Yeah. It's where someone had David Bowie as their absolute hero. And with the mantra of until you ask the question, the answer is always going to be no. They were a sound engineer. And one fateful day came by when David Bowie walked past and they just went, David. And he looked at him straight in the eyes and he said, would you like a cup of coffee? And apparently David Bowie went, no thanks, and just got on with his life. But it was a perfect exchange because yes is fine, but so is no. The world is not binary, but I love the fact that you had a moment of connection and that was enough.